Hello, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, which is always a wonderful thing. To be able to hear each other is a joy and a privilege.
Privilege, yes. It is.
It is. I am talking to you because of a paddle board.
Yeah.
I was at Idlewood Park and a gentleman was coming out of the water on a paddle board, and I love to paddle board, and my dog was very interested in it. And I always ask everybody I meet, tell me about an amazing woman you know. And he told me, this is George Thomas, thank you, George, told me, you have to talk to Julia Freeland.
Yes, he's very kind. It was very sweet of him to do that.
Well, he's a smart man. Julia Freeland is the founder of Revolve U, what a great name, and the creator of the Breakthrough Compass, which is a personal change framework designed to harness the power of human nature to help propel us to a better state of being. Congratulations, that's a hell of an achievement.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
But before we go there, I have a question. How does someone with a mechanical engineering degree and six career reinventions end up where she is today?
Good question. Well, I think the six career reinvention speaks for itself, which is that I'm somebody who likes to reinvent. I like change, which is probably why I've become so obsessed with this idea of how do you help people through change? Because back in 2016, I thought I was really good at it. I would have told you that change was something that I did naturally. And yet I found myself going from being the darling of the company, the superstar, rising star, and somebody who is managing all of the revenue earning projects of our company, a small consulting company that did learning and development. And then found myself 6 months later being demoted and then fired. And I couldn't figure out why. And what kept on arising, the one idea that kept on coming forward was what had happened during those 6 months. And was we evolved. We had been trying to evolve the company and really change the way we did projects and services. And without knowing it at all, I fought it. I didn't want to do it at all. And so I had to take a moment, sit down, and spend some time saying, how does somebody like me, who loves change, who loves to reinvent, fight change blindly without knowing I was doing it? And why? And so I put my mechanical engineering degree, my hat, my very analytical hat on, and my passion for developing people, and I try to come up with a scenario of how do you help people go through this kind of change, the kind of change that all of us are facing today, which is big, overwhelming, life-altering change that challenges our identity and our sense of well-being. And takes all of that out of our control.
The world completely changed around February 2020 for me.
It did. Yeah. What happened with you? Do
Oh,
you have
you, but it changed for us all. All of a sudden, yeah, the world was a very different place, and we're still experiencing the emotional hangover from that. But so obvious that's. I don't believe anything is ever wasted. So your mechanical engineering degree, you were able to apply to yourself. I still want to know what those six careers were.
Well, I'll tell you one thing that it might surprise people is that one of the six careers was being a mom, being a stay-at-home mom for 10 years. And I definitely consider that a career.
Oh, it's a full-time career. It's a 24/7
Yes.
career. I don't think there's extended lunch hours or paid leave or sickness benefit that comes with that one.
No, there certainly is not. Do you have kids?
No, I have two amazingly beautiful stepdaughters and an abundance of godchildren and nieces and teenagers that have stayed with me,
Love.
and friends' children. I am blessed that I can find one whenever I want one.
Lovely. That sounds like an ideal situation.
It is, but I admire everyone who is a mom so much. It is an incredible career choice and provides such value. Back to what you are doing now. First of all, I want to celebrate your success. Congratulations on your Amazon bestseller, Take Your Shoes Off First.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I'm very excited about it. It's been a fun whirlwind roller coaster ride to kind of see how it's connecting with people. And it's been a pleasure to see that people are reading it and being impacted in it, by it in many different ways, and then liking it so much that they're sharing it with their teams and buying it for their teams. And I just got an opportunity to do a live speaking event last week, first one in 2 years. Yay, face to face, so great. To be able to talk to people about the whole premise of the book, which is that we need to become more aware of the beliefs we hold and how they shape our thinking, our understanding, and the actions we take. When we do take a moment to become more aware of those, we can help ourselves calm our defenses and try to take those filters away so that we can see more than what we currently see today. And it's all about learning to break through basically the blinders that we have on that prevent us from seeing perspectives of others.
The book's also available on Audible, by the way. Congratulations for that. Where did the metaphor take your shoes off first come from? I mean, to me, I take my shoes off immediately when I get home. I lived in Japan for a while. I wince every time I see someone with shoes on a bed. So, but where did the metaphor shoes come from?
Well, there's a phrase, a very common phrase many of us use that say we say to try to tell somebody else. Obviously, most of the time we're trying to tell someone else to do this, which is go ahead and, well, why don't you take a walk in their shoes? And
Ah.
it's this idea that if we take a walk in somebody's shoes, that we'll be able to understand them somehow, that we'll have greater empathy for them. And yet, the truth of it is that we have our own shoes on already. So the phrase is incomplete. If you don't go through the process of taking your shoes off first, meaning taking your way of moving through life, your set of beliefs that you hold that guide how the actions you take, what you believe, what you understand, even what you hear and see. If you don't take those off first, set that off to the side, all you're going to see when you try to walk in somebody else's shoes is your own imagination of what they're experiencing as seen through the filters of your beliefs and experiences.
Oh, that's fantastic. I'm very foot obsessed at the moment because I'm having foot surgery next week.
Oh.
I'm be having to take off my moon boot, but that is bloody brilliant. There's a great photo of you with your foot right next door to your book, and you're wearing the most beautifully colored mist match toenail polish, which is phenomenal. How do you choose those colors and what you normally like to put your toes in?
Well, I am pushing to make rainbow toes the new it fad, because for me, and I've even got a sticker here, and the cover of the book has a picture of a gentleman who has rainbow colored toes. Now, it's not in reference to the LBG, I always get the wrong TQ world. It's actually in reference to seeing diversity of thought. And the character in the book has a new experience he's never had before, which is having a pedicure. And that new experience really shocks his system, like his old programming, his old ideas that manicures or pedicures are only for girls, that they're not something that he would really like. And he goes through the process of kind of it, submerging himself into a pedicure salon, and through that experience of being taken out of his comfort zone and put into a situation that's not comfortable for him. And then even embracing one step further of not just having a pedicure, but also getting his toenails painted, and not just one color, but rainbow color. All of it just kind of heightens all his senses and makes it so that he starts to question a lot about how he's been operating in the world, how he's been thinking. And then he's also like very conscious. Suddenly he's very present with this, with the space that he's in. And when you get into that place of being really in a new environment, well, actually I'll ask you, you have a strong accent, but like, as you go, when you go traveling, what's the experience that you have when you're traveling? Do you feel like you have heightened senses or lower dampened senses?
This is why Julia is a natural coach. It's very rare that a guest will turn the tables on me, and I'm not used to it. And you feel uncomfortable, and you'll notice I'm deflecting a lot. But I have been fortunate enough to visit around 14, 15 countries, and I love it. My favorite, one of my favorites, was Japan and Greece. So does it heighten senses or dampen them? It heightens my visual senses.
For sure. I would venture to guess it heightens your all your senses, actually.
Well, I'm a very visual person, which is so it tends to hit that one first. I don't deal with noise very well, and I get overloaded easily. But the crowds of Tokyo felt so comfortable, and I adore neon. But America was different, if I may segue, because it was disconcerting because it's very similar, but it's not. So I kept my senses and my brain kept thinking that I knew that everything was the same, but it wasn't. It was different. So it was a bit disconcerting.
When you were in Japan, you said?
No. Japan made total sense. America didn't make sense, especially since when I was traveling, it was obvious. In a lot of the countries I was in, it was obvious that I was a guest, whereas in America, I blend. So until I opened my mouth. So it was a sense of invisibility I didn't have in other countries.
Interesting. So that shaped how you experienced that, because it felt more disconcerting because you almost like there was an expectation you placed in yourself. Like, I look like I should know what I'm doing.
Whereas in Tokyo, no one was perfectly normal to ask for directions in very bad Japanese. But here it was, except I have to admit, Costco scared the hell out of me. In a warehouse that big, it was overwhelming, and I had to turn around and run out. And I immediately went to Whole Foods and breathed into a paper bag until I felt better.
Well, it is an overwhelming experience for sure. I could see that, especially when you've got like the American, like the pumping of the blood of America going through in and out of that, just, you know, rapid fire and people like on a mission to get to what they need to get to. I could see that being...
It wasn't that so much. I mean, I've been in Shinjuku Station where 4 million people go.
Wow.
It was the mass consumerism, seeing the enormous pallets full of enormous packages that really threw me. I come from a very small country.
That is fabulous. And that is actually one of my main experiences when I've gone traveling and have submerged myself into other cultures. And then I get used to that other culture and I come back and I have a repulsion, actually, it's alarming to see how Americans handle our consumerist society, we must need bigger and better and more and greater. And I think that it's that very mindset that's going to cause the U.S. a lot of problems. And it's actually one of the big drivers behind why I do what I do, which is realizing that we have got to, as a country, it's not just the U.S., but it's a lot of people. It's as a country and as a culture, we have got to shift the way we think about what we use, what's enough, how do we embrace and think about how I think about others and how we engage and care for others. There's so much we need to shift because of what's happening, not only with changes in our climate and political atmosphere, but also in what's possible thanks to the virtual world and advent, innovation in technology. There's a lot of that's being kind of, we're busting at the seams from, and we're trying to still abide by these old values that the U.S. has held, which other countries do not hold. And it's just, we've kind of reached our limits and we're going to break if we don't figure out a way to embrace new ways of thinking and doing, and letting go of our consumerism is one big, huge piece of it.
It sounds like America needs the breakthrough compass.
Yes. It's definitely the first target audience I have in mind.
I'm so grateful to be here. So many incredible benefits to being in America. It's still surreal. I still wake up every now and then and go, I'm in America. How the hell did that happen? It's surreal.
How long have you been here?
I've been here for a few years now, but like you, I'm used to changing. So this is a long time in one place. But I want to get back to the breakthrough compass. Tell me more about it so we can understand how it helps people at an individual level, how it helps organizations, how it can help countries.
Yeah. Well, the book I wrote, Take Your Shoes Off First, underneath the parable, it's just there's a very simple, easy to read story in there. It only takes about an hour to read it. And it underneath it, kind of the skeleton or the backbone of it, is the breakthrough compass. And the breakthrough compass is a representation of humans' natural process that every human goes through to evolve to a better version of who they are, one that is adapted to the current conditions of the life that they're in. And it's something that I stumbled upon. I take credit for codifying it, but the framework itself, or what it is, the process itself, is something that's just innate in every single human. It is human nature. When I myself had three massive, I call them life quakes or change quakes, that completely altered the way I understood my life and my role in it and how my life was supposed to unfurl. In these three different shocks in my system, I had to rise. I had to figure out how to become a new person, a new version of me that was going to be better suited for the world that I had just landed in. And I noticed that there was a pattern. After the third one, I noticed that there was a pattern to how I kept on standing back up. And I realized that pattern was, I kind of was like, is this just common to me? Or is this common to others? So I started interviewing people who had also been through big life-altering change. And sure enough, the same pattern for recovery showed up in each of their stories too. And at the core of it all was just human nature and our four dimensions of human nature, which have been referred to over time. You might have heard them as earth, wind, fire, and water. You might have heard them as heart, mind, body, and soul, spirit. But it's just a representation of these four dimensions and how we move through, thinking about those four dimensions. And like, we do it in a very specific order in order to evolve, to become a new version of ourselves. And that's what the Breakthrough Compass, is founded upon.
And of course, a compass, if you are moving through four dimensions, you need a compass.
Yeah. The beautiful thing about the compass too, just like it was very specific. I wanted it to be represented as a compass because, one, there's no specific starting point. You can start anywhere and it will get you to anywhere. Whenever you're feeling stuck, frustrated, in conflict, a big, huge challenge in front of you, the compass can help you understand what's the next step that you need to take in order to kind of get through the challenge that's before you. So it can act, it acts as a, not only as a, like a beacon showing you, kind of showing you the way, it also acts as a training, like a training guidebook almost, that basically telling you these states of mind that are within the compass are things that each and every one of us have innate within us, where it's born, we're naturally born good at evolving. However, after living in a world of loss of relative stability and being fed messages of predictability and being rewarded for our ability to do repeat performance and our ability to deliver perfect product, our whole ways of thinking have become very rigid. And you were speaking about the US culture, like there's a lot of people, I mean, grand majority of people that live in the US, I would say, have a very rigid understanding of the way life is supposed to work out. And that's based a lot on the consumerism messaging. And yet, if we went traveling and went somewhere else, one of the things that happened to me when I traveled, I was like, wow, where's the big refrigerators? Why do they have these little teeny, what is this? You know, it was cracking open some of my rigid understanding of the way the world's supposed to work. Grand majority of the people in the US are living, and they're like, well, in fact, you know, part of the problem we've got with the haves and the have-nots is that there's so much out there in the media telling people like what you could have or should have, that we end up with a lot of people depressed because they don't have what they know they could have. And so there's a rigidity that sets in that makes it so that we spend more time protecting and preserving what we have and shooting for some kind of preordained idea of what success is supposed to be than we do actively engaging in change and movement within our lives and embracing new ideas.
There's so much to go into there. I was taking notes as we were talking. I'd like to point out that if you go to Julia's beautiful website, revolveyou.com, her compass is multicolored. And I would all be wearing rainbow toes. Perhaps yeah. America had rainbow toes under their socks because we're coming into winter. wonderful for the world. But is that compasses, you know, the dial on a compass revolves, we revolve, career into, you know, the world of jobs is changing and pivoting. Is that where the name Revolve You came from?
Well, Revolve You came from, yes, it was the idea of evolving again. So it was Evolve You again. And I wanted it to be this more of a message that you don't, as an adult, become one person and then just kind of stay there. That's not how you remain relevant and vibrant in life. You remain relevant and vibrant in life and kind of you can continue to reinvent and recreate and rediscover yourself, but also just discover yourself throughout your entire life. I don't care how old you are. I mean, there's like 83-year-old people are just winning the Nobel Prize, and there's who are just getting their PhD, and I 100-year-old lady ran a marathon, and I'm like, there's so much stuff. So, one of my big things is like, what's that?
Oh, excuse me, I was saying I plan on evolving. My grandmother's 100. I plan to keep on going.
Awesome. And I think that's so great. And I think the more we hear stories about these 100-year-old people and these 80-year-old people that are still living full, vibrant lives, the more we have to change our beliefs about what our life is supposed to look like. Because how many people do you know that are around you that are like, yeah, when I'm 70, that's when I think I'll finally start. I'll go back to school. It's not something we think about. It feels weird. And yet we need to reframe what our vision of life is supposed to be like as our life expectation continues to get longer and bigger. And as our medical advances continue to make it so that we can have longer, healthier lives, and our ways of helping, you know, staying mentally healthy and physically healthy extend our life, what changes. We need, you know, it's not just a matter of extending it out, because now you have people that are retiring, you know, they retire at 60, thinking that that's like the time they're supposed to retire. And I can't tell you how many people I've seen just kind of, they just almost just fall away because they believe in this idea of like, that's what they're supposed to do. And yet they're vivid. They're still like vibrant people at 60 when they're working. And then because they sign up for this idea of retiring, they seem to just kind of almost decompose in front of your eyes.
It's a fixed mindset.
Yes, very much so.
I know you find enormous value in curiosity.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's my big, that's a big message. I want everybody to challenge the beliefs they hold, and question the values you hold. Are those values still relevant today? But a big part of that is like, become aware of those and just get curious about what is it that's shaping why you think what you think. And when we're all born, we have two main instinctual drivers. We have the drive to protect and preserve, to survive. And then we have the drive to evolve. And in fact, if you had to pick one of those, when we're born, our capacity to evolve and change is the number one thing we are best at when we are born. Every cell in our body is designed to morph, to evolve, to become something different. When you talk about stem cells, like why we looked at stem cells, is because children, baby, like small infant human cells are designed to rapidly change and become something new. So if you think about it from, you know, as this over time, initially we have this huge, massive drive to change. And our drive, we do have a drive to survive, because one of the things I just was hearing on NPR this morning was like, was just a great indicator of our immune systems as children. The reason why COVID is not impacting children as much is because our immune systems, when we're young, are very powerful. And they're primed to fight whatever virus and kind of learn. They're like ready to learn, just like human minds are ready to learn. So our drive to survive is on that. It's still, even then, it's based on growth and evolution. But over time, as we get older and we start collecting things, or as we start creating expectations for how life is supposed to be, our drive to change evolves. And our drive to protect and preserve, to survive, increases. And if you think about the state of mind both of those generate, if you're in a protective mode, you're being driven by fear. And when you're being driven by fear, you're not very open-minded. You're not very open to new ideas. And how do you think, like, what do you think the state of most people is in right now? Do you feel like most people are in a state of fear, or they're in a state of being hopeful?
As you pointed out, 65% of jobs don't exist today, of the future jobs, which is something I want to ask you about. So within the entrepreneurial community, the women entrepreneurial community that I've talked to, there's been a wonderful mix. It feels like overall there's been a fear of what could happen, but I'm seeing women pivot. I'm seeing them start businesses. I'm seeing them rediscover who they are or change their perception of who they are. I'm seeing them have more time to reflect. Their life has changed. All of a sudden they're homeschooling, or they're working from home, or they're having to channel their creativity. They're unable to give workshops or be in group environments. They're having to, I'm seeing so much and personal growth that I believe there's a lot of hope out there.
I love to hear that. That's great. I think you're right that a lot of people are doing a reevaluation of how they're living their life. I think that remote work has certainly opened up the doors for a lot of people career-wise. I do feel like the messaging that you listen to through the news, or if you think about our political situation and how nobody gets along, I think there, and if you think about the threats that are kind of hanging over everybody's head, there is a lot of pessimism out there, a lot of fear out there too. And I think what I'd like to do is see much more of what you're talking about, which is how do we help bring, help see people see what else is possible? Like that yes, there are some threats on the horizon, but if we as humans believe in our amazing human capacity to evolve, I think we will discover that we can work together to create a way better future than we currently might be anticipating.
A woman to that. I hope has gotten me through so much. And I have to admit, I curate my experience of the world. I don't watch the news. I'm very careful as to who I associate with. And I have my reasons. And that helps keep me, it helps keep me well.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, I have friends that can't be in the same room with each other because of differing beliefs. And yes, if you do watch the news, it can be very triggering, upsetting, depressing, terrifying. So I validate what you're saying.
And I think not watching the news all the time is a really good way to help people kind of gain a grounded sense of, wait a minute, that doesn't have to be the future. And there are so many good, wonderful, beautiful things that are happening every single day. It's one of my main complaints about the news is that I feel like we're manifesting a prophecy for ourselves just because of what we repeat. I mean, it's very proven in research that what we focus our attention on is what we will find more of. And if we have positive views and visions for ourselves, intention about what we want to do, we can help shape the direction that our life will move in, because that just that positive intention and belief will shape what decisions we make and what actions we take. But if it's on a negative side, we end up living more in a state of fear. And so we start anticipating and seeing everything around us as threats. And that leads more to a status quo. It leads more to that leading from a place of all about preserving and protecting, which does not lead to growth. Growth, you have to do exactly what you are saying, which is let hope drive. Make it so that you consciously choose to be hopeful in a situation as opposed to being fear-driven.
It's going towards growth mindset versus fixed mindset, because hopelessness is it's the antithesis of creativity. So right there with you. You and I both, as I think George was saying, we are all about visions. For me, a vision is my rudder, the rudder for my life. You have a compass and I like my rudder.
Mm-hmm.
I make vision workshops. And I know that you believe having a vision is important as well, personal and organizational and at a world level.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Tell me more about that.
Well, my vision is to empower people to feel like they can thrive through change. I want to challenge the idea that change is something that should be managed or that it's something that's periodic. I want people to realize that it is equally a part of their life, it's a part of their life every day. And it's not something that should be feared so much. It should be something that we try to embrace and engage in more. And I believe that people do feel so fearful because they are in a state of mind of being more about preserving and protecting what has always been. And if we can not only shift people's mindset into one where they're being more curious about what's possible, I always say, I want people to believe in infinite possibilities. And when you believe in infinite possibilities, it helps you have that hope. And you can build change characteristics that are natural to who you are, you can build your capacity to calm your defenses and to become better able to adapt and work collaboratively and bridge differences if you cultivate a set of mindsets and traits. It's not just fixed mindset. It's not just growth mindset. It's a lot more. It's learning how to embrace being wrong. It's learning how to be humble. It's learning how to be confident in yourself, learning how to understand what value you have everywhere you are. And this is something that's good for individuals, for groups, for companies, anything. Change requires that we let go of what has been, and that can be scary. So when we take a moment to get really clear about who we are and how we show up and what we bring to the table, no matter what situation we're in, or whether we're talking about organization or individual, that makes it so that we can have more confidence in our ability to venture out into the unknown.
Julia wants us to dance through change. I read that on your website and it's beautiful, dancing through change.
Mm-hmm.
I need to get a question in there about clothes at some point. Low colored toenail polish. What clothes do you like to dance in? And is there particular music that's on your playlist when you're dancing through change?
Yeah, actually, like Sarah, I was one of my favorites is Try Everything. And from the Zootopia movie it's not Christina Aguilera. Who is that by?
Oh, it's Shakira.
Shakira, yes, Shakira.
Yes, try
totally. Everything. Yes. Try Everything. I love that. It's definitely a motto of mine. And as far as, and you know what, clothes-wise, I definitely have my favorites, but I do love to have, you know, a wide variety of clothes. And just this week, it's interesting. One of the things I do believe in is wearing clothes that are one, comfortable, but two, fit the situation or environment you're in or what it is you're trying to portray. I am a big believer, and I do coach my own clients on dressing for how you want to feel that day, and making sure, I do believe also that you can feel like a million bucks. There are certain outfits that you can wear that make you feel like a million bucks, and that can definitely influence your sense of confidence for the day.
Oh, absolutely. Hello. Dress for your vision. Dress for the way you want to be.
Yes, totally agree with that. Yeah. Well,
that is what I'm all about, right there with you. And dress for your values, dress in alignment with your what's important to you, dress in alignment with your dreams and your goals. You're speaking my language.
Sounds like it.
The clothing is wearable art, and I believe we should have more art in the world.
I think I think it's also one of those things. I encourage people when I used to coach people through to go out and for their interviews and stuff. And I'm like, hey, if you want to show up, if you're applying for a job that has something to do with creativity, then go ahead and be creative with what you're wearing and be creative in your resume. Be creative with how you show up, even what you write. So it's interesting, based on what is important to the job you're trying to apply for, it's good to make sure that's reflected in all aspects of how you show up.
Absolutely. It's mirroring. And also, if you turn up just really conservatively to a creative environment, it's cognitive dissonance.
Mm-hmm. Dissonance, yeah.
And you're not matching the message of the company. So I agree with you on that. Speaking of companies, I want to ask you about your workshops. I want to ask you about your digital transformation. But circling back to the fact that 65% of jobs that will exist in the future don't exist today. I mean, my nephew, who's 11, will have been a career that I can't even imagine at this point of time.
Mm-hmm.
I know that one of the skills you have is you're a DISC facilitator. Forgive me if I'm pronouncing that wrong. And knowing your strengths, your zones of genius and things like that is so important. Would you tell me a little bit about it? Is it called DISC?
It is called DISC. And it's basically a behavior assessment model or framework you can learn fairly easily, which helps you read another person and then be able to alter your behavior in slight ways to ensure that the communication that happens between the two of you will happen more productively. And I'd say DISC is something I actually haven't practiced that in a long time, but definitely it's at the roots of my fascination with how people get along with each other. And how do you increase and improve relationships, which is a big driver behind the Take Your Shoes Off First book that I wrote, which is all about somebody, you know, the main character is in conflict with his co-founder. And through the process of the book, goes on a journey to start understanding what's his role in the problem that they're having. And I feel like so often we spend a lot of time assuming that somebody else needs to change for us, or that somebody else is the problem.
That's so helpful.
And I think, you know, one thing that DISC does, and then just, and also just the Breakthrough Compass framework, it's all about helping us unwind our certainty that somebody else is to blame, and to help us take accountability and take stock of where it is that we're coming and what we're adding to the conversation, what we're adding to the situation. What is it that we are doing that we can control? Because truly, the only thing you can control is you. You cannot control another person, but you can influence heavily what somebody else does and how they show up based on the behavior that you come to the table with. So it's learning to really understand what's your impact that you're having on a relationship. And it is shocking once you do a deep dive. And I can tell you, it can be extremely painful to, when you have that aha moment of going, oh, wow, I'm the one that made that. Like, it was bad. It was definitely one part, him or her or whatever. But wow, my impact made it so much worse. Like half of the trauma I've been experiencing is because of my own locked in beliefs about what was happening and my blindness to what was really going on.
I can completely understand how that relates to taking off your shoes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's why the book is resonating on a big level with a lot of CEOs, lots of moms, just of all different walks. And it's lovely to see people say, yeah, my whole team needs to read this. And then we come in and then I can come in, or there's actually guided discussion questions in the back of the book, which helps people become more aware of what are the beliefs that we're operating under, and why, what is the impact of those beliefs, and how might I be influencing in a negative way the situations that I'm having? How am I blind to my actions and the impact of those actions?
I'm here. I'm just applying it to some situations in my life and thinking,
It's powerful and it's hard to, I mean, I think that what I, you know, some people, you know, it's like the idea is like, well, do I really want to know that I've been causing problems? And
I do. I believe there's always the other side of the coin. For if I have something about myself and I'm thinking, okay, that's something I need to acknowledge, there's always a positive side of it. My impulsivity is mirrored by the fact that I seize the day. I seize opportunities. I am open to adventure and travel. So no self-knowledge, even if it's painful at the time, is ever wasted. There's always something positive that can come out of it.
I believe that fully. I also believe that, man, if I'm making a mistake not knowing it, the faster I can figure out that I'm making, you know, how I'm making that mistake, because that is not how I want to show up in the world. So the faster I can learn that truth, the faster I can change. And let me tell you, there's nothing quite as motivating as discovering that you have been showing up in some way to some person that you value or you find important, that you've been showing up in a way that's completely counter to what you thought or to what you value, to make you want to change your behavior. You will do it quickly.
Nothing like repercussions.
Yeah.
I'm going to switch slightly to the fact that you help organizations, corporations as well with digital transformation. What do you mean by that?
Well, my role in that situation is really helping people embrace change. And because of the world we've been living, because of our programming that we've had, we do tend to approach work and what our future is supposed to look like from a very rigid perspective. We might think, oh, yeah, I'll learn a new skill, or I'll learn a new, I just have to keep up on the new tech that we're using, and then I'm going to be good. I'll be fine. Well, when we talk about digital transformations for organizations, what we're looking at is that organizations are not just changing their products that they're selling, they're actually changing the whole way all of their services are being developed and delivered. And that has ramifications that go from the bottom all the way up to the top in how we sell or how an organization sells the products. I mean, they might be one company I worked with, like, started off with each of the salespeople were selling $4,000 products. Well, by the time the digital transformation was over, they were having to sell $150,000 products was the base level. And so how you sell a $4,000 product versus selling a $150,000 product, it's radically different. And the whole approach, how you engage with a client, how you engage with, like, who you talk to, who has the budget and the control, the reins on that kind of budget to spend is radically different. So what the impact is that inside of the company that's going through the digital transformation, every single role inside that company is being altered. And so Aaron, for you, where once you might have felt like you were, like, we could use this example, you're a gifted podcast host, but we went into a situation where we suddenly said, sorry, you no longer can do podcasting, but now you're going to have to do it on video. Or you're going to have to do it on Clubhouse. Now, that's a very different set of skills that you're going to have to develop. And if you saw yourself as a really great, amazing podcast host, but I've just wiped that identity away from you, what are you naturally going to do?
Well, actually, I'd be fine. I've got a TV and film production background.
I picked the wrong example.
If you take away my identity, I'd like to think I'm resilient. I've had 35 careers, so I'm resilient. You take away, the closest I can come to it is when I came to America and I had left a full table. I'd left a huge community of people that knew me, loved me, got me and understood me, and ha I had a history with, a herstory with. I came to America, and all of a sudden, there was nothing to reflect. I had nothing to be reflected in. I didn't see the house I'd moved into had none of my personal possessions. All of a sudden, I had to. I lost my identity. I remember going to a hairdresser and not really paying attention to what she was doing because I was so engrossed in her. Fascinated by other people, and she dyed my hair a color it had never been before. And when I looked in the mirror, I didn't recognize myself, and that threw me. It felt like I'd completely lost myself. So
There you go. Yeah.
it took a lot of concentrated hard work and another hairdresser to get me back to feeling like I was myself again.
Yeah. When you have something challenge your identity, some aspect of your identity that you consider core to who you are, it can drop us to the ground and leave us feeling like we don't know which way is up. And
I had no compass.
yes, no compass, exactly. That's what the compass does. It helps you figure out how to get back out of that. But yes, and I think that the situation we're in when we're you talk about, like, you're mentioning the whole, 65% of the jobs that will exist in the future, that our kids will work in the future don't exist today. Well, guess what? There's a whole lot of people that are working today will still be in the job market in 30, 40, 30 years, 20 years.
Yes, we will.
And those jobs will still, there will still be a big, huge shift. I mean, we're creating new jobs every day. Schools cannot keep up with the technology advances. So we they cannot the universities can't train people fast enough to get into these new roles, but the demand for the new technology has increases so fast, thanks to consumerism, that companies are struggling to train to have enough trained people to do those jobs. So we talk about how, there's high unemployment and a lot of people out of jobs, but there's also a huge number of jobs that are not being filled. It's because there's a massive disconnect between what people feel, what people are qualified to do, what they have the education to do, what they have the mindset to do, versus what needs to be done. And if you have a whole generation of people that are locked into this idea that my career is done, like I don't need to, I went through college, I got my degree, and I've got all this work experience behind me. Why would I want to start over? Why would I need to start over? Then you get in a situation like what we're in today, which is a lot of people out of not having jobs and a lot of companies looking for people to work those jobs, but not able to find them because you have one side, a bunch of people saying, why do I have to learn something new? I'm just going to find my old job. Well, that old job is very soon not going to exist. And then you've got people that are in their midlife saying, why do I have to learn something new? That's not the script or the old programming I bought into. That's not what I was told. And then you have the other situation, which you have companies that are inventing so fast that people need to be learning every single day to be able to keep up. And it's not just learning new skills and new tasks. It's sometimes it's completely like grabbing onto a brand new role, something that's radically different, and being okay with, okay, that was my old identity. I guess I'm done with that now. I'm going to go on to a new identity. And so a lot of that's just a side note, a lot why you're seeing a lot of companies jump into offering a lot of free training. Like Salesforce has developed a massive library of training and certifications that you can do completely for free because they're realizing, oh wow, I've developed a product, all these clients need it, but they don't have anybody who's certified to use these tools. So and the universities can't teach these people fast enough. So we, hello Salesforce, we're going to have to create our own university to teach people. So it's a very different way of thinking about evolving and reinventing. If you've had 35 different careers, you're way off, better off than me. But this is the world we're jumping into, one where there's a lot of reinvention of our careers, no longer this like solid trajectory. And we need to change that programming, that way of thinking.
Oh, yes. Here's to evolution. Here's to evolving. Here's to having the mental stem cells of children. And find Julia Freeland if you want to break through to better, faster. RevolveU.com, ReEvolveU.com, Revolve, and also connect with her on LinkedIn as well. Julia, I really appreciate your valuable time today. I'm so grateful to George. Remind me to take him a coffee next time so when he's getting off his paddleboard next time. Very grateful he connected us, and very grateful to the lake that ended up bringing us together, or actually more my dog. Your time is valuable. It was very much appreciated, and I love the food, the thought you gave me. Knowing my inner compass will help me with my outer compass.
I love that. Yes.
Have a wonderful rest of your day, and I look forward
Thanks.
to connecting with you soon.
Thank you. You too. Thank you for having me and letting me share my ideas.
I look forward to hearing them again. Bye.
Bye.